Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the D1 Baseball Selection Show Breakdown. Aaron Fitt, Kendall Rogers, Mark Etheridge with you. We want to start by thanking our new sponsors for the postseason, Wilson Baseball. We're super excited to have Wilson as our partner on the road to Omaha this year. It's going to be a great ride. We're off and running. The Field of 64 has been announced. Mark Etheridge, Nerdmaster General, what is your snap reaction?
Well, I think the first thing that stood out for me is RPI played a really really important role with this committee. All of the top 40 RPI teams made the field. 41 is Georgia. I think that was kind of interesting to me. That and you had two SEC teams, five games under 500, that both made it in. I think that was interesting. And then there's the whole Fairfield thing. You didn't really know how the committee would evaluate them, and they decided to include them.
Kendall, how about you? What's your overall take on how the committee did this year?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is I'm just really disappointed that Notre Dame didn't get a top eight national seed. And I get it. Like, I had no problem like Mississippi State, for instance. But I think when you look at Notre Dame, and that's my biggest qualm here, I think when you look at Notre Dame, 4.5-game lead atop the ACC, they lost one ACC series a whole year. And I get it. People want to say, well, they didn't play more than four non-conference games. Well, like, do we know that they could have actually added more games? You know, were there constraints from administrative standpoint, things like that? I think Notre Dame not being a top eight, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I just thought, too, you know, this is a year, guys, and we've talked about this so many times on the Nerdcast, but this is a year to where, like, you should not have relied solely on the RPI. And for the most part, like, this committee relied solely on the RPI. I mean, look at the question that they, you know, asked Jeff Altier about Alabama. Like, it was strength of schedule. I mean, and nothing else. Like, to me, if you put a team in as a bubble team, you got to give me something more than that.
That was a bad look there, especially since just a second earlier he had said, well, Pitt finished bad their last 10 games. That's why they didn't get in. And then Alabama, I mean, if you look at them, they lost 9 of their last 12 games, guys.
Yeah.
And I know they won two games in Hoover, but they lost 9 of the last 12 games. And if you stack those two teams up, you know, Pittsburgh's top 50 record, 17-12. You know, they went 12-3 against those ACC regional teams, Miami, Florida State, North Carolina, Georgia Tech. I mean, I think Virginia also. I mean, that's really loud series wins. Alabama doesn't really have anything high-end on his resume. 8-17 top 50 Alabama, 17-12 for Pitt. That one is hard for me to defend. And you know what? And I get it for Alabama. You had some difficult circumstances this year with your pitching injuries, and like, kudos to those guys. I'm happy for those guys. They had a hard season, but I still don't think they deserve to get in over Pittsburgh and probably over a couple other teams.
I mean, for me, it's a league pick and it's a RPI pick. I mean, I think those are the two factors. The question I think I would be wondering is what happened to Georgia, right? Is it because Georgia's in the same league, had the same record, went in, had a, quote, play-in game with LSU, wins it, but they don't get in. The only thing you can look at is the RPI because Georgia's 41, Alabama's 32, LSU's in the 20s. You know, I'm not in the room. I don't know exactly what they talked about, but it sure looks like they just took the top RPI teams. And then for a few other ones, they didn't, right? Because North Carolina was like 47. They skipped over Georgia to get to North Carolina, right? Santa Barbara was, what, 51, whatever they are, skipped over to get to them. So you went RPI to a point, but then you took a couple other teams that, you know, with not terrible RPI, they didn't take a 75 like Louisville, but they didn't, you know, it just looks like an over-reliance on RPI. And for me, I think you have to look a lot deeper than that. And maybe they did, and they just coincidentally picked those top 40 RPI teams, but that's, you know, that's kind of hard for me to get behind.
Well, and the other thing for me with Pittsburgh is when you look at Pittsburgh, you know, those guys are rolling the whole year. They have a 2-week COVID shutdown. They come back. They kind of squeak by Boston College. They didn't play well the last two weekends. No. But in a year like this, if like there was any time to kind of have a little bit of sympathy for a program, it'd be one that had a 2-week COVID shutdown perhaps. And so that, to me, like Pitt should have been. And I think Baylor, for me, I don't know about you guys, but I think Baylor being the first team out was a little surprising to me.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I didn't see that. I thought K-State was ahead of Baylor. Yep. But because of the RPI, Baylor's RPI is what, 44? Again, we keep saying this. There's a lot of circumstantial, we'll call it, evidence. I mean, it's piling up.
I will give the committee credit, at least in the case of the Big Ten. They overlooked, they looked, I guess, deeper and took the top three teams in the Big Ten. Michigan, the third team in, had an 89 RPI. We've talked about all year long, Big 10 RPI doesn't really matter because they didn't play any non-conference games, zero. And so, you know, you kind of look at the standings and those were the top three teams. They didn't take Indiana or Iowa, but they really, frankly, those two teams didn't do enough down the stretch to play themselves in. So I was satisfied with the way they treated the Big 10. And on the other end of the spectrum, Fairfield, I mean, you know, they didn't get in because they have a number three RPI. They got in because they went 37-3. It's the same deal as the Big Ten. They dominated their conference. They had zero non-conference games, and they were rewarded for it. And I'm fine with that. I think that was the right call.
I think they did. I think the committee did make the distinction with the Big Ten and the MAC. Okay, what I would have liked for them to do is understand how some of the other leagues, like the ACC, the Big South, pick the ones that you want, how their lack of interconnected schedules impacted the RPI. RPI is not perfect in a good year, but especially this year when, you know, you're playing 10 non-conference games or less, it's going to affect your RPI if you're only playing conference games.
Yeah. I will say this about the Big Ten, guys, kind of going back to the Big Ten real quick. I did have an issue with one thing, and that's sending Nebraska to Fayetteville as a 2-seed. I just think when you look at the Big Ten, when you had Maryland and Michigan right there, and I get it, they're probably looking at it geographically going, oh, we can just, you know, put Nebraska on a bus because it's, you know, it's 5 hours away. But I have a problem with sending the Big Ten champ to the top overall national seed and then sending Michigan over to Notre Dame, then Maryland, giving them a little bit easier matchup going down to East Carolina. I don't like the idea of sending Nebraska down there. And the other thing that kind of stood out to me is I actually thought Tennessee got a tough draw, you know, for a top three seed. You know, Wright State, people forget Wright State beat them in a series last year before the season was shut down. And, you know, Alex Sogard and those guys, they know what Tennessee's all about. You look at, you know, getting those guys and you get Duke. I mean, Duke, other than UVA, Duke is the hottest team in the ACC. So you're saying, saying Tennessee, congrats on a great season. Oh, by the way, you get the hottest team in the ACC, and you get a Wright State team that has an RPI in the 20s.
And Wright,
since
Wright
the
State
RPI is so important.
Yeah, Wright State, I think, is underseeded as a 4. I think they should have been a 3. I thought Arkansas's number one national seed got a tough draw. Like it stinks for Nebraska having to go there after winning the Big Ten. We had a question here in the chat about why Nebraska got a worse draw than Michigan and Maryland if it's not based on RPI. Well, the answer is it's based on geography. I mean, that's which they do, you know, every year. They always take a lot of those opportunities to keep teams on buses instead of flying. And that's why Maryland is busing down to East Carolina and Nebraska is busing to Fayetteville. But that's a tough draw for Arkansas, too. You know, a strong 2-seed, and I think Northeastern's a very dangerous 3-seed. So not that I'm worried about Arkansas. They beat anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, but for number one national seed, that feels like not a great reward. And how about Arizona, guys, as the Pac-12 champion and a national seed, and you get one of the best 4 seeds with an ace in Grand Canyon. You get a 3-seed Santa Barbara that seeded appropriately. They're one of the last teams in the field, but they're really dangerous. They're really good. They got real pitching. And you got a strong 2-seed with Oklahoma State, one of the top 2 seeds in the tournament. I mean, that's a tough field.
Yeah, absolutely. And another one that I thought was really difficult is Oxford. You have Florida State as your 3. I mean, I certainly considered them a 2-seed, right? And you have Southern Miss, who was in the, up until the last day, was in the, you know, contending for a host spot. I mean, that's a really challenging field for Ole Miss. At least they're not a top 8 getting that kind of draw, though. You know, that it could be worse. I thought that Mississippi State got a relatively easy draw. VCU, while they're really hot, they would certainly be one of the lower 2 seeds if you S-curve this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Campbell's had a good year, but Samford as a four is not a cakewalk. So at least you have a, you know, you have a little balance there.
We had a question here from Matt. How incredible is it what Texas Tech has done? Are they in college baseball royalty now? Another national seed. And I will say, first of all, you know, I caught some heat on Twitter because I tweeted out that for what it's worth, they have representation on the committee. And, you know, I'm not saying that's why they got a top eight, but we see it every single year. If you have representation on the committee, you get a boost. I mean, teams get in off the bubble if they've got an AD on the committee. Teams get overseeded if they've got in a committee. And I know it's not supposed to work that way, but it's just the way it has always kind of gone.
Yeah, I mean, how else did Mississippi State get the regional that it got? And like, you know, I hate to say it, but that's there's a lot of truth to that. I will say this about Texas Tech, both good and bad. What an incredible run those guys have been on! I think it's five straight years they've hosted a regional. They're a top eight seed yet again. I think this is a really good team. I think Texas Tech, what they've gone through injury wise to be to this point, I think they're a really good club. Obviously, we have a ton of respect for Tim Tadlock, but on the negative side for me, when I look at Texas Tech, I'm not seeing an eight seed. When I look at Texas Tech, they finished three games behind Texas and TCU in the Big 12 standings. They did beat them both. They finished three full. I feel like if you finish three full games behind, it kind of cancels those out a little bit for me. Yeah. And they didn't go on a run in the conference tournament. So I would not have had them, frankly, over Stanford or Notre Dame.
I agree. Yeah, that both of those. I mean, I've talked about Stanford's case before. Mm-hmm. Stanford, you know, and we didn't ultimately expect Stanford to get the nod. I think they should have been one of the top eight personally if I were building the field. But, you know, the season they had was really impressive, winning series against each of the other five regional teams in the Pac-12, plus three out of four from Big West champ Irvine. Notre Dame, though, guys, you win the ACC by five games. And I get it. They didn't really play many non-conference games or out-of-conference or midweek games. I don't know the reason behind that. We'd have to find out more if it was their administration that told them they couldn't or what. But it feels like maybe the committee punished them because they thought they were dodging games. I don't know if that's accurate. Well, I'll have to ask them about that. But otherwise, I mean, I don't understand how you can have an 8-bid league and have no national seeds. But the team dominated that league. They won it by five games.
Yeah, you mean to tell me that a team that dominated the ACC is scared to go add Indiana or not Indiana, but like Indiana State in a midweek game? Like, that's really hard to believe. I mean, that's what a dumb narrative to push.
I think it's more a matter of the RPI and how the ACC was bunched together, right? You didn't have the really high RPIs. Like, you know, typically you have three or four in the top 20. And this year you had Notre Dame. And they, you know, in a normal year, their RPI is going to be elite. It's going to be right up there in that top four or five if they win that league by that much.
Yeah.
And again, I wrote something this morning, you know, kind of talking about how the host sites and how the ACC and all of that it would still apply to this premise that we're talking about now. Go read it and see what you think about how the RPI, how it affected the ACC this year. And certainly if you look at the selections, we talked about Pitt having these, quote, you know, impressive high-profile series. The committee didn't feel like they were that impressive.
Yeah.
And that's RPI-based.
Right. Here's a good question from the chat from Drew Jones. If you had to pick 1-3 seed to make it to Omaha, who would you pick? I'm telling you, I've got two in my mind. And I might wind up picking them both. I don't know. I haven't made my bracket yet. But I think Virginia – I guess I can't pick them both because they might play each other. Virginia and Dallas Baptist are two teams that I think could come out of their regionals. I mean, you know, hey, there's a lot of good teams in that Columbia regional, but really like the way Virginia's playing and the whole balance of their club. And DBU just feels dangerous to me in Fort Worth.
Yeah, I would agree on Virginia for sure. That would be the one I would focus on.
Yeah, I would keep an eye on Florida State too, guys. I think when you look at Parker Messick and those guys, you know, offensively they can certainly get it done. I think Florida State, if they can find a way, you know, to beat either Hunter Stanley or Walker Powell in that first game, I think they've got a shot. Because I think SEMO, with what they've got on the front end of the rotation, I think SEMO's probably – or I think Ole Miss is probably going to have to throw Nikhazy in that first game. That obviously gets him out of the mix. And granted, they had some guys step up in Hoover throughout the week, but FSU is going to be a tough matchup for any starting pitcher.
Well, guys, I need to run, do a press conference, but enjoyed it. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Kendall, do you want to go a few more minutes before we wrap
this thing up? Let's answer some questions.
Yeah, here's a good one. Wayne Council asked, why is there a regional in Columbia? And this was something that you and I, we talked about a lot. You know, I think the answer is the committee felt Old Dominion was deserving of a top 16 seed, which we all agree with. And they didn't want to send them across country to Spokane. And so they kept them.
Sense.
Yeah, they kept them more local by sending them to South Carolina, which I think is defensible. Even though you're really rewarding South Carolina as a 16 and 15 SEC team.
I think you're rewarding South Carolina as a 16 to 15 team. But what I do like that the committee did is they said, you know what, like, hey, we're giving you a host, but oh, by the way, you're going to have to get through the first or second hottest team in the ACC. And oh, by the way, ODU is actually pretty good. And then Jacksonville, granted, the overall record is not great, but they played really well in the ASUN tournament. So it's not like, you know, they gave them a host, but I mean, the Gamecock are going to have to earn it. I mean, they've got the arms to get through this, but they're going to have to earn it. They've got a really, really tough field. And I'm with you. I think I'd pick Virginia to win this thing right now.
Question from, I think, a Hale State fan here. How is Texas ranked or seeded ahead of Tennessee? I think it just comes down to the fact they won the Big 12. You know, I mean, and that was one that I've mentioned a few times in our Nerdcast is I feel like you win the Big 12 and have a top five RPI, give or take. Typically, I think you get the nod over the next best team in the next conference. But, you know, Tennessee having won their division and getting to the SEC title game, I mean, yeah, that's a coin toss. I don't think that's a big deal either way.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Let's see. We've got Channing Cottle asks, do you see Oklahoma State keeping this momentum and having a serious chance to get out of Ruston, potentially take the short road trip to Northwest Arkansas for a Super? Well,
they're not they're in Ruston. Arizona.
Yeah, we thought they were going to be in Ruston, but no, they're in Arizona. Which is not an easy.
That's a really good regional. You know, I think when you look at that regional overall, obviously Arizona with its offensive capabilities, I'll give the edge to. But you know, Oklahoma State played really well throughout the week. They had some guys step up. They got some guys back from injuries. Justin Campbell. You talk about a big time pitching matchup. You look at the UCSB against Justin Campbell in that opening game of that regional. That's going to be a dynamite showdown there between the Gauchos. And I think the Gauchos, and we kind of alluded to this earlier. I think the Gauchos, just because, you know, the West was kind of sectioned off from everybody this year. I think a lot of people haven't seen UCSB, but this is a team that coming the year that we were really high on. You look at those guys on the mound, they're deep. They dealt with some injuries in the field throughout the year. But I think for the most part, I want to say they're back to almost full health. So this could be a scary team that could go on a run.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that regional is pretty wide open because even Grand Canyon, I think, is really frisky there as a four seed with Pearson Ohl going in that first game. That's not an easy assignment for Arizona. I think Pearson Ohl has won his last eight starts heading into this thing. So really polished pitcher with a lot of experience. Let's see what else we got in the questions here. Question about Mississippi State. Couple questions about Mississippi State. If you can believe that, Kendall, we got some State fans on the show. State fans always come out in force. With the draw, can Mississippi State not only make Omaha, but make noise when they get there? Sure. I mean, you know, I think they got the best bullpen in the country, and I love betting on bullpens in the postseason. They need to play a lot better than they did in Hoover, but yeah, I mean, you know, how many times we see teams go out there and get just stuffed and fall flat and then use the extra practice time and come out hot? I mean, that was kind of like the Ray Tanner formula back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, the thing when I look at Mississippi State, if they can just get to Omaha, and it's kind of the same situation, Aaron, I feel like with Arkansas, you know, with a day off between games, you're in a situation if you're Mississippi State like Arkansas with Kevin Copps to where, you know, you can put Landon Sims out there at the start of the eighth inning, you know, or even maybe even the seventh inning in any game in Omaha, give him a day off, and then bring him back. So I think with Landon Sims and that bullpen, I think they could do really, really well in Omaha. And I get it. They didn't play very well in Hoover. I mean, they played awful. I think they got outscored 25-3 in two games. But this team's a lot better than that. The big key for me, Christian McLeod, he did not look very good in Hoover. For State to get to Omaha, he's going to have to get back on track.
No question. That's a huge key for them. Here's one about the Big Ten. How do your expectations of how the committee would handle the Big Ten compare to what happened? Not just the teams that got in, but Indiana and Iowa that didn't. You know, I think they handled Big Ten exactly like we thought they would. You know, it was right there for Indiana and Iowa to get bids. They were right there in the last 2 weeks of the season, and they didn't get it done. I mean, really, I think this could have been a four-bid league with a chance for five at one point if those two teams had finished better, and they didn't. And so we kind of thought the top three teams would get in heading into this this weekend, and or heading into today, I should say, and that's what happened.
Yeah, the problem with the Big Ten is, you know, Indiana just didn't finish strong. And for a team like that where you can't look at the RPI, like, you're going to have to finish strong to get in the field, and Indiana didn't do that. Would Indiana pass the eyeball test, McKay Brown, those guys? Absolutely, but you've got to finish strong. Cole Gross asked about thoughts on Texas. Should we be worried about Fairfield? I feel very good about Texas. I think the one big key for the Horns guys going into the postseason, Ivan Melendez, I've got to get him back on track. That offense was not the same in OKC with Ivan struggling before OKC. He was on a roll, and that offense kind of took on a different identity. I think when you look at Fairfield, I don't know about you, but, like, I'm actually pumped to see Fairfield this weekend in Austin. Like, this is a club that we've talked all season about. This is a club that, like, in Nerdcast, we've kind of joked, like, at least I've joked about, like, that, you know, people think they're so good. And they've had a great year. But, like, I'm very intrigued to see how they stack up against Ethan Long and Arizona State, and ultimately, potentially, how they stack up against Texas. I'm fascinated. Are these guys, I'm not going to say, like, a pretender, but, like, are they just a very below-average three seed, or is this Stony Brook 2.0? Like,
we don't know.
You know, which one is it? We don't know.
You know, the team that I think could be Stony Brook 2.0 is Northeastern. Mm-hmm. And not, I mean, it's, yeah, they won't be because they have to go to Arkansas, which just nobody's going to beat Arkansas, especially in Fayetteville. I mean, yeah, I say that. Watch those be my famous last words. But Northeastern feels like that team, you know, because it's legit pro talent. They got a bunch of guys drafted like that Stony Brook team. So, I mean, I know you look at their resume and you think, oh, they didn't beat anybody because, you know, they can only play the northern half of the CAA this year because of the weird schedule. But I'm telling you, they're dangerous. So keep an eye on those.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And what I'll be very intrigued to see from Mike Glavin, their head coach, you know, Mike's done an amazing job in Northeastern to get that program to where it is. But I think what's going to be really interesting about the Huskies, Aaron, is, like, do you risk throwing someone else in game one and hold Cam Schlittler for Arkansas, it, like, looking ahead to try to win that regional, or do you throw Cam in the first game and just kind of take your chances from there? I mean, I think that's a legit question. Like, do you just kind of gamble a little bit in hopes that you can get your ace for Arkansas? I think you kind of need to.
And they have multiple good arms too. I mean, Kyle Murphy's another one. I mean, they got a lot of experience on that staff. Let's see. We've got give me a host team most likely not to get out of regionals, Kendall. What do you got there?
I'm going to go – you know what? This is tough. I'll say this. I like NC State and Ruston. Louisiana Tech was certainly taxed from a pitching standpoint over the weekend. I'm really intrigued to see how they bounce back from that. I just, you know, really liked what I saw from NC State the last three or four weeks of the season. You've seen them more than I have, obviously. But what are your thoughts on those guys? Because I think NC State's playing an incredibly high level along with UVA and Duke out of the ACC.
Yeah, and UVA is one that, again, felt like an Omaha team to me, and so did Duke watching those teams over the last week. I look at Columbia, you know, and South Carolina, you know, they haven't played great against the good teams they've played this year, and they haven't been swept, but they haven't won most of those series against the good teams they've played. I mean, Florida is the exception. But, you know, you've got Old Dominion, who I think is a great fit for that ballpark, home run hitting team. I mean, they can, you know, and the home run was big for them in Ruston. They got the big Kyle Battle game winner in the extra innings. And Virginia also has power, but they also have real arms. And Old Dominion has arms too. I just think both of those teams are really dangerous. South Carolina is certainly capable of winning too, and they're going to be at home, and the fans are going to be into it. You know, and so if you're a two seed and you get to play at home, that's a nice advantage for you. But that one just feels wide open to me.
Yeah, it does. And I think the big key for the Gamecocks is, you know, will they hit this weekend? I actually really, really like South Carolina's weekend rotation. But the times I've seen them this year in person, they just have not hit at all. So the key for them is if they can, you know, they can hit Wes Clark and company, get rolling. I mean, this is a team that can make a run to Omaha. When you look at the other side of the bracket with Fort Worth, they could absolutely make a run to Omaha, but they're going to have to hit.
And they got Andrew Abbott in the first game. Now, maybe that's not the worst matchup for them because South Carolina is kind of right-handed heavy, and Abbott is, you know, lefty. But Abbott, he can pitch against righties too. He's developed a better changeup too, so that's a fun matchup.
I'm going to give you, Aaron, I'm going to give you, and I want you to think about this too, the scariest 1-4 matchup. I don't know about the scariest, but I've got my eye on McNeese and TCU, Will Deion. McNeese is ace. TCU does not hit lefties incredibly well. Will Deion's a really good pitcher. He's hard-nosed. He's an old guy. And he's got a lot of funk to him. That's going to be a much different look for the Frogs. And so I know Phillip Sykes and company, you know, hitting at a really high level right now. Sykes had another big game yesterday against Oklahoma State. But Will Deion's got a lot of funk. He's going to be a weird look for them. I think that's going to be a really good game in that 1-4 matchup in Fort Worth.
Yeah, I've talked about Grand Canyon. The other one that, you know, we alluded to earlier that stands out to me is Wright State. You know, I mean, again, it's an extremely offensive team. I believe they led the nation in batting, slugging, and on base percentage. I saw that somewhere yesterday. Tyler Black, real stud bat. But also Jake Schrand has got legit stuff, mid-90s guy as your number one starter there. So, you know, and they got a couple of good arms. I think Wright State's really dangerous. That is such a fascinating field there with Red Hot Duke and Liberty, which can really pitch and defend at a high level. Both those teams have regional experience, veteran position player groups. Tennessee has his hands full, and we know Tennessee's really good, but it's not going to be easy for them.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to say our man Chris Bird just tweeted out 4 of the top 36 teams will be in the Knoxville Regional this weekend. So committee not doing number 3 seeded Tennessee a lot of favors. Somebody asked about LSU getting in. Do we agree? I think I'm okay with LSU getting in. Beyond the obvious storylines of Paul Maneri, I think LSU, when you look at the last 3 weekends of the regular season, LSU actually started to play at a much, much higher level. They, you know, I get it. They lost the one game in Hoover, but I would have definitely had LSU ahead of Georgia and Alabama in my pecking order. And, you know, again, this committee looked a lot at RPI. LSU had the RPI and they played well down the stretch. I have no issue with LSU being in the field. And, you know, that's another really good first round matchup. Landon Marceau against Alex Jacob of Gonzaga. I don't know if they'll start Gabe Hughes or Alex Jacob, but either way, both those guys are really good. So one of those two guys against Landon Marceau, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, especially 9:00 at night on Friday. How about that, LSU fans? That's a late night. It's a lot of whiskey too.
Good question, though. Just following up on that, or comment from Ben Upton, does LSU's 2021 give you the same vibes as Florida State 2019 with Mike Martin's last year, and they make an Omaha run? You know, that kind of feels like it could be in the cards. I mean, hey, LSU, we questioned their offense heading into the year. Offense hadn't been an issue. You have Marceau and Labus, and, you know, I think they got a real chance out there. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're as good as that Florida State team was.
Right, I agree.
Like just talent-wise, especially positionally, outside of Cruz and Trey Morgan. But, hey, you know, they could go on a run. The thing that will be interesting out there is, you know, how much offense will they generate? I mean, that's just a really tough place to generate a lot of offense. And so that's a really fun regional. You know, Gonzaga is going to be playing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulders. You know, you could say they were snubbed. I mean, they did lose that series to USD and got blown out the last 2 games. So I don't have as much, like, sympathy for them, but they might have a little bit of anger from that.
Yeah, if they had won that last series, I would have had a stronger opinion about that one. As it is, I really didn't actually have much of an objection to sending Old Dominion to South Carolina instead of Spokane.
Yeah, no issue. Yeah, whatever.
I mean, and so a question about, you know, how good of a job the committee did. You know what? I think overall they did a pretty good job. My only 2 complaints are Notre Dame not getting a national seed, you know, Texas Tech over them. I think Texas Tech would be a defensible pick, but I wouldn't have made that pick, and I also just – I think it's hard to snub Notre Dame after the season they had. And then, of course, we talked about Alabama getting in over Pittsburgh. I didn't like that either. But other than those 2 things, I mean, really, I thought most of the teams were seated appropriately. For the most part, you know, you can quibble here or there. I mean, you know, one of those ACC 3 seeds like Florida State or Virginia could have been a 2. Wright State, I thought, should have been a 3. But, I mean, overall, I mean, I thought maybe VCU could have been a 3 instead of a 2. But overall, they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I would say one thing that would probably switch up a little bit if I was the committee here is just the pairings in Oxford and Starkville. I think when you look at Mississippi State getting VCU and Campbell and Ole Miss getting Florida State and Southern Miss, I kind of feel like the committee should have split the difference on that thing, like send one of USM and Florida State to Starkville and one of Campbell and VCU to Oxford. I felt like that's a little bit loaded versus not so much.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Can Southern Miss pitch their way out of Oxford? Seems like a tough regional.
Absolutely.
Top three teams there. Yeah, I mean, that's their strength. Yeah. Certainly is their pitching. I mean, maybe don't throw your starting shortstop in there with the game on the line to pitch. But yeah. I don't know. Look, I didn't watch any of that game. I don't know what the circumstances were, what they had left. So,
well, I just, you know, I've seen that on Twitter. Yeah, Aaron, I saw those guys at Rice. And, you know, I tell you what, Hunter Stanley, Walker Powell, Ben Etheridge are three really solid starters. Ron Ock out of the bullpen is really good. And so they've got four and certainly more guys in the bullpen. They've got four what I would consider like frontline options. They could absolutely win that regional, but they're going to have to hit more. I get it, like they hit in the conference tournament at the end and everybody's out of arms. But when I saw them earlier this year, it was pretty much like Reed Trimble, Gabe Montenegro, and like no one else was hitting the 2 days I saw them. So Reed Trimble, keep an eye on him. He's a lot of fun to watch. I know you saw him in the fall, but man, he's an electric player.
Really good player. Kendall, a couple of questions now. How would you see a potential Texas-Florida matchup? I mean, I don't know, you know, if we're necessarily going to have that matchup. I think Miami's actually quite
Miami could be a one-to-one. I mean, Miami or Florida against Texas, like, come on, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, talk about big brand name powers there. You know, but Texas would be at home. They play so well in their ballpark. Their team is built for that ballpark. I think they pitch better than either of those teams.
I'll say this about Florida, and I'm not taking it to the bank of Florida because I just don't know if I trust those guys this year. But I'll say this about Florida. They played really well at the SEC tournament. You know, Sterling Thompson, the young slugger for them, was outstanding there. Nathan Hickey, no surprise, showed big-time power there. And the storyline for me to keep an eye on with the Gators is Franco Aleman, who's been very consistent this year, put together an outstanding start in Hoover. You know, if they can get Tommy Mays, Barco, and Aleman to throw the way they did in Hoover, and then you can, you know, go in there with Jack Leftwich at the end. All of a sudden, for me, my feeling on Florida is a little different because I feel like they've been a little too inconsistent on the mound this year, specifically in the starting rotation. So if they can continue what they started in Hoover, I feel a lot better about UF in this regional.
Somebody, Alan Stevens comments, Ruston will be one of the more exciting weekends. Good teams there. Yeah, I mean, certainly we touched on that one earlier. NC State playing as well as anybody in the country right now. And look, it's not a deep pitching staff for NC State. They need to stay in the winner's bracket. But if they do, I mean, their top five arms are good. And their offense is really, really good. And their defense generally is really good, too. They didn't actually play great defense in Charlotte, but really like their personnel there. So I think they're very dangerous there as the two seed. And you got Alabama as a three. I mean, who knows? It's kind of a house money team. You never know.
Yeah, you know, the other team that kind of stands out to me, I can't believe I didn't mention them earlier when we were talking about the 1-4s. But keep an eye on Jordan Bischel and Central Mission. They go against Notre Dame and South Bend 1-4. You know, they've had a strong, strong year on the mound with Andrew Taylor and Jordan Patty and guys like that. So they've got a really good 1-2 punch. You know, it's kind of the same. It's kind of funny, right? Like when you look at the MAC with Jordan Patty and Andrew Taylor and Ball State, who didn't get in the field. Ball State was a team that Aaron and I both really would have liked to see get in the field. Our hearts said we wanted them in the field. Our heads said they weren't going to get in the field, so we didn't have them in the field, and they didn't get in. But when you look at those two MAC teams with Central Michigan, with Patty and Andrew Taylor, then you look at Ball State with Chase McDermott and John Baker, I mean, honestly, that's as good as a 1-2 punch as anybody in the country outside of maybe Vanderbilt or, you know, or teams like that. So keep an eye on Central Michigan. They're going to be able to pitch with Notre Dame in this regional.
Yeah, that's a great call there, Kendall. I can't believe I overlooked them as a dangerous four seed because they absolutely are. That is a four seed that could win that regional. And that's wide open too because, you know, UConn, we've talked about it all year long. I think they're capable of winning a regional. And Michigan is a three. You know, you still got some guys left from a CWS finals team, although it's largely a pretty new club. But, you know, they have a lot of talent too. So, and of course, Notre Dame, I mean, all they do is win all year long. But one thing they don't do, Kendall, is haven't swept a lot of teams. It's been a lot of 2 out of 3. You kind of wonder, all right, like, can they put it together, win 3 straight games with their pitching? And you know what? I think they can, certainly. I mean, they have done it. But that's a tough draw. It'll be a good challenge for Notre Dame this year.
I think the other interesting thing for me, just in terms of the overall field of 64, Aaron, is like these conferences that played a 4-game series, you know, like how will they fare in these conferences or in these regional tournaments? Like, do they have a little bit of an edge considering they've, you know, been playing 4 games all year long? That'll be very kind of intriguing for me to kind of follow.
Yeah. We've got
– Can somebody explain to me what Mississippi State fans' obsession with Notre Dame is. I'm trying to figure that one out. I can't figure it out.
I don't know. I mean,
I've been bombarded from Mississippi State fans about Notre Dame all week. Like, I'm trying to figure it out. I didn't realize that Starkville and South Bend had some rivalry I didn't know about.
I think they were just ticked off because we had Notre Dame projected ahead of them.
But we still had Mississippi State in our final projections.
I know. But, well, I think a lot of people were just looking at the strength of schedule metrics or the RPI stuff, which, again, as we've said over and over again, doesn't really apply that much to the ACC this year because of the way their schedule was set up. And so I think people just couldn't wrap their minds around us having Notre Dame ahead when, you know, whatever the metrics said. But, you know, that said, look, that would be an interesting matchup. I mean, for sure.
I feel like, you know, Notre Dame, in all fairness, and we're joking around when we say that, but, like, when I look at Notre Dame, they're one of those teams that we spent the entire season going, okay, well, they're going to come back to the pack. And they just never did. Like, they just kept winning series after series after series. And so, you know, they certainly relied pretty heavily on Tanner Colup out of the bullpen. I'm really intrigued to see what they do in the postseason. They're going to play with a little bit of chip on their shoulder, but they've been ultra, ultra consistent.
Matt wants to know, how does North Carolina or UCLA style mesh with Dan Law Field in Lubbock? That park is made for offensive teams. That's a good point. North Carolina, not a particularly offensive team, really. You know, you got a little bit of juice in there, but really it's Austin Love on Friday. I mean, they got to win that game against UCLA with their ace, and then we'll see if they got enough horses after that. Kind of a question mark. UCLA, you know, again, it's a West Coast team, plays West Coast style. Not a ton of power there. They can certainly, you know, their pitching came on strong at the end of the year. I do think UCLA is a pretty offensive team, though. I mean, you can see a lot of doubles, triples out of that team. And sure, they got some guys that can drive out of the park, too. But it doesn't feel like that's a great spot for either of those teams to go, as well as Texas Tech plays at home and as well as they're built for that ballpark.
Yeah.
What's, let's see. Scrolling through the questions here.
What, Aaron, I kind of have my, what is the most intriguing super regional, potential super regional matchup that you'd be looking forward to?
So if we're just assuming, you know, one seeds here.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Florida, Texas would be the one for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a good one. Certainly. Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss, Arizona would be a lot of fun. That's probably the one that stands out most.
There would be a lot of runs scored in that super regional, I think.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's two very, very offensive teams. That'd be my pick. And, anything else we want to touch on here? We want to wrap this thing up.
No, I think we've honestly pretty much covered everything.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun field. Again, overall committee did a pretty solid job. I don't know. You have a grade for him, Kendall?
I give them a B+. I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, I still go back to Notre Dame. It stinks because like Texas Tech's like the last program that I want to downplay, right? Because they've been such a force. They've been so consistent. But I just think at the end of the day, I think Notre Dame deserved a national seed over those guys. I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to this weekend, though, is the atmosphere at Baum Stadium if Nebraska and Arkansas play. It was kind of funny. I was talking to Dave Van Horn, you know, about the possibility a couple of days ago of playing Nebraska in that regional. And he was kind of laughing like, man, like Nebraska is going to send a couple thousand people down here. But he's like, I don't know how in the world they're going to get in our ballpark. And so, you know, Nebraska fans are going to travel for that. And think of this. What if Nebraska pulled the upset and then hosted a super regional in Fayetteville? I don't think that's going to happen, but. Be kind of interesting.
That would be interesting. That's true.
Be a hell of an upset.
You're right. I mean, that's a good reminder that if one of these top, you know, seeds gets upset and has a chance to host the super, they have to do it at one of the 20 predetermined sites.
Fayetteville.
Yeah, that would be wild. That would be wild.
I don't think that's going to happen. But
no, unlikely.
Baltimore will not let it happen.
Here's one more question I'll touch on here. Mark Calloway, ECU grad, asks, it appears we have a favorable regional. Thoughts? I will say this. Maryland is really hot right now. I think that's a frisky three seed, but I was surprised that East Carolina, with all those ACC teams in the region, did not get an ACC team there. You know, you can take your pick of the candidates there between NC State and UNC and Virginia. I mean, there's plenty of guys' choices there, but you have Charlotte as your two instead. And I get it. You can't send Charlotte to Columbia where you've already got a two hosts and you got a Conference USA team as the one. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense, but Charlotte didn't really play as well late. They had a quiet exit in the conference tournament. East Carolina has already swept Charlotte. So yeah, it does feel like a fairly favorable matchup, but I think Maryland is dangerous. They played very well down the stretch and that's a talented roster.
Yeah, no question.
All right, guys, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for all the questions. You know, the engagement is always fun. Definitely want to thank our friends at Wilson, our new sponsors for the postseason coverage this year. Great to have those guys on board. Please check them out. Wilson Baseball, always, you know, one of the great brand names in the game, have been forever. I mean, what a cool partnership. We're glad to have those guys on board. Kendall, thank you for another fantastic season and a great job today.
It's a bittersweet day, man. Yeah. You know what? We've got the field of 64, but the Nerdmaster General can just go retire for the rest of the summer.
We're going to keep him busy. We're going to find a way to keep the Nerdmaster General busy.
We still have the road to Quahog.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Everyone always looks forward to that one. So
Georgia. You might get the number
Georgia might be number one national seed. Or Pitt, you know, I think Pitt's got to be way up there.
Yeah, Pitt's got a really good case.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for us, guys, and to everyone listening on the podcast version of this stream, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with plenty more content, breaking down all the regionals all week long. We'll have coverage from sites probably around the country here coming up next weekend, so be sure to check us out throughout the postseason of D1 Baseball. Thanks again, everybody.